Jake Huger, Atticus Barrett, Mean Green Machine, Adam Green is here. Oh no!
Good to be back.
Good to be. Good to have you, brother.
Back home.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So Adam used to be a fairly frequent guest back when we had guests on the regular program. He's of course the head of the everyone knows he's the head of the PCCC and a co-founder of the Progressive Change Campaign Committee, boldprogressives.org. Everybody knows that. I'm just saying it anyway. And Adam was also on Old School on Wednesday night. All you members, check that out. He was on Old School earlier when he demanded that it be made public, and it was. You know why? Because the PCCC, it gets things done. Okay, it brings the people's demands.
In this Trump era, that was one of the few progressive victories that we've had, making making public Old School. So we'll take them where we can get them.
Yes,
that and bump stocks or whatever. Like, two victories for the decade.
Yeah, apparently so. All right, you know, guys, I didn't tell you this in the control room because there's insanity in the control room tonight. No, there's actually insanity here. But anyway, tytkansas.com. I'd like to check in on it. So Brent Welder, we're going to check on his progress throughout the show. He's running in Kansas. He is a wonderful progressive candidate backed by Just Democrats, Our Revolution, and PCCC. We just announced that. It's $15,421. Okay, 620 donors. I love that. Can I see 20,000 by the end of the show? Is that asking for too much? I don't know. We're going to find out. Can I see 20,000? If he gets $50,000, Brent gets to have a field team. They go knock on doors. They win this election. He is a TYT member. So you guys stick up for us. We stick up for you. Let's all do this together. And he is currently beating the Republican in the race by 7 points, which is awesome. So let's finish him. Let's finish Yoder. All right, we might get back to Yoder a little bit later in the program, but Casper's got a ton of news for us. Let's get started.
All right, later in the hour, my favorite story, Parkland students just going after these politicians. They are not letting up. You don't want to miss that. But first, Trump's insanity. Donald Trump and the Republican Party is now focusing on the latest scapegoat for the Parkland mass shooting that took place in a high school campus in Florida. Now, 17 people were shot and killed, and people are debating the issue of gun control. But Trump wants to focus on the issue of a school resource officer who got word of the mass shooter and did not go into the campus to stop him. Now, during CPAC, Trump addressed the cop, and it did lead to some ramifications for this former resource officer who has since stepped down from his job. He took early retirement. Take a look at what Trump had to say.
You know what else? And I thought of it since I found and watched Peterson, the deputy who didn't go into the school because he didn't want to go into the school. Okay? He was tested under fire, and that wasn't a good result. But you know what I thought of as soon as I saw that? These teachers, and I've seen them at a lot of schools where they had problems. These teachers love their students, and the students love their teachers in many cases. These teachers love their students. And these teachers are talented with weaponry and with guns. And that's, they feel safe. And I'd rather have somebody that loves their students and wants to protect their students than somebody standing outside that doesn't know anybody and doesn't know the students and, frankly, for whatever reason, decided not to go in even though he heard lots of shots being fired inside. And the beauty is it's concealed. Nobody would ever see it unless they needed it. It's concealed. So this crazy man who walked in wouldn't even know who it is that has it. That's good. It's not bad, that's good. And a teacher would have shot the hell out of him before he knew what happened.
So that was actually the second time that Trump identified the school resource officer who did not go into the school as he got word that a mass shooting was taking place. And understand the framing of what Trump is using there. He's talking about how teachers love their students. The teachers would have done something about it. Basically making it seem as though this resource officer didn't love the students, didn't care about protecting them. Look, the officer was a 30-year veteran. He did not do what he was supposed to do. So Trump is right in that regard. And so I'm not going to take away from that argument. However, he is not the reason why these mass shootings happened. He is not the reason why 17 people were gunned down. And to make it seem as though this guy is the only person we should be focusing on and that he doesn't love the students, teachers love students. And by the way, Trump said that these teachers are skilled in weaponry. Based on what evidence? Based on what?
Yeah, that's just made up. So a couple of quick points here. When he said, it's concealed, that's a good thing. Wait, why is that a good thing? I don't understand his logic. His logic is if the shooter knows, he explained this at length throughout the week, that if the shooter knows there are people with guns inside the building, they're cowards and they won't come in. Okay, so what difference does it make if they're concealed or not concealed? Because you just told everybody, and presumably the shooter has to know that there are weapons for your strategy to work. So, but it's a good thing, not a bad thing. Based on what? I mean, there's just no logical flow in anything he says. The armed guard is also armed, so the shooter would know that there's someone armed in the building. And why would an armed guard, like normally, on average, do worse than a teacher whose job is not to shoot students,
right,
but to teach them? That makes no sense at all. So what does he do? He has to rely on this guy not going in the building to buttress his insane argument that somehow teachers would be better than cops at shooting people. And this guy, look, what he did, of course he should have gone in. For the president to name him and to publicly shame him like that, that's crazy. He's now got armed guards protecting his house. I mean, number one, I would imagine that he feels horrific at this point, right? Number two, he let down the whole community and they've got to feel anger, disgust, sadness, etc. That's also weighing on him. Number three, you know Republican trolls. God, the things they must have said to him by now. And for the president to pile on to a citizen like that, it's the usual insanity we've gotten to know with Donald Trump.
Because they want a scapegoat. Any scapegoat will do as long as it will prevent them from talking about actual common sense gun legislation. They don't want to focus on the real problem. They want to focus on symptoms of the problem.
Absolutely. And you know, a lot of stuff you just said operate on a very human level, right? This guy's feeling bad. He was wrong to not go in,
right.
You know, to add to the human level, both my parents were teachers for over 30 years. And I'm trying to imagine my mom, their 96-pound frame, who already has enough stress in her life and is caring a lot for the students, being told to go learn how to shoot a gun. That
right.
makes no sense. So it is inspiring that real solutions finally are part of the debate again. But this scapegoatism is really problematic.
It's terrifying. And also, think about how underpaid teachers are, how underappreciated they are. And so there might be some teachers that are comfortable shooting who might be okay with the idea of them carrying a weapon onto campus. But there are a lot of teachers who aren't okay with that. So does it mean that in order to qualify as a teacher in the United States, you not only have to be passionate and skilled when it comes to teaching, but you also have to be a sharp shooter and ready and willing to protect your students with a firearm at any given moment? That's absurd. There's so many great teachers out there who have no interest in holding a gun. And no one should be forced to have a gun or carry a gun if they want to educate young people.
You know, you mentioned your parents, Adam, and that immediately made me think of my teachers. And my teacher that made the biggest difference in my life was Mrs. Rosenberg in fourth grade. And I'm picturing Mrs. Rosenberg with a gun. It's preposterous. It's insanity, man. And you know what? You know who else is a teacher? Anna's a teacher. So
yeah.
They want you to, she's a professor at CSUN. So what do they want you to now, like, carry a pistol to And remember this, one of the students made the best point yesterday. He said, you know that it's either usually students or former students. So you'd be training the teachers to kill their students.
It's crazy. And it's one thing to think about how someone would react theoretically if an incident like that were to occur. But it's another thing to actually shoot someone and to kill someone, right? And I think it's easier said than done. I think people, you know, on the right are making the assumption that anyone would be comfortable just shooting and killing someone if it was a mass murder. It's a lot easier said than done.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
One thing I'm curious about is, you know, you saw those people give a standing ovation at CPAC for the stuff he was saying. And I'm curious how representative that is of the larger kind of Republican or conservative oriented voter back home, right? You know, these are a bunch of political operatives, basically, who have a political incentive and a professional incentive to clap for him. But I'm curious whether Republican moms and dads back home actually believe that they want teachers to be armed with their kids in the classroom.
Well, so there's some evidence that they are not comfortable with it, because the new poll out, well, both ways here, says that 33% of Americans like the way that Donald Trump has handled this shooting. So 2/3 saying, no, this is not the right way to go. So that's comforting. 2/3 of the country is a very significant majority. Of course, among Republicans, 70% say he nailed it. And Adam, it's another great point. As I looked at that crowd, I thought, I don't know who I'm more disturbed by. This buffoon man-child, this president, going around giving speeches, you know, calling out individual citizens and then going, it's not bad, it's good. Or the buffoons who are clapping for him and giving him a standing ovation, like, oh, this guy nailed it. That's a very stable genius who we look up to.
Well, those are the people who put him in power. So I would argue those are the people that you should be more concerned with. And that's what I'm more concerned about, right? We have these debates about propaganda on social media, on, you know, bad actors trying to spread false, misleading information. And what concerns me the most is not just that that happens, but how easily Americans fall for that kind of stuff, right? These are the people who go to the polls, they vote, and they're the ones who elected this guy. That buffoon's been around for a very long time. He's been around for, what, over 70 years at this point? He was never a threat until Americans made him a threat. So.
Yep. One more clip or the next story?
Let's move on to the next story.
All right.
Indiana's attorney general recently had a meeting with Donald Trump, and during this meeting, he proposed a few solutions, potential solutions on school campuses in case another mass shooter attempts to carry out what just tragically happened in Parkland, Florida. Now, interestingly enough, and perhaps unsurprisingly, Donald Trump had a very difficult time comprehending what this attorney general was attempting to tell him, because the solutions didn't include armed teachers. Take a look.
The school created a model for security. And in the security, not only do we have bulletproof doors, bulletproof glass, we have containment zones. When the students are in the classrooms, the doors are locked. So we don't have to go up and lock them from the outside. Mayor, we talked about that earlier. That was a concern you had and how that's done. This is all done automatically. The school is wired directly, securely to the sheriff's department 10 miles away. So the sheriff's department can monitor in real time what's occurring. Each teacher has a key fob so that when something occurs, they can communicate effectively and immediately with someone off-site.
And the most— Do you have anybody inside with a gun that can take on the man that's right outside the door? By the way, can shoot right through the steel doors as they did in your school? Well, those bullets went right through those steel doors like they were butter.
You know, let's watch the rest of it.
Okay, all right, then we'll come.
That's a part of what's necessary, but I can tell you this, what else they have are countermeasures. Countermeasures that can be employed from the sheriff's department within seconds to contain the attacker and, in a sense, turn the attack on. That's a critical piece. I would invite you to come to Shelby County.
I just don't know what that means, honestly. I don't know what that means.
Well, I can tell you what it means. When you're in the hallway, if you have an active shooter in the hall and he's going around and he's looking for targets, we've got the doors blocked, we've got it locked up, somebody's monitoring, and for example, they have smoke canisters that can come in and blind the shooter, which detracts him from the his target.
All right.
Okay, I'm sorry. That was funnier than I expected, because I read it before watching it. And in reading it, I was actually going to say, look, to be fair to Trump, maybe he's just never heard that tactic before and he's just a little confused by it. That's okay. And he's asking in front of the national audience. I'm not sure that that's the direction I'd go, but you could argue it's earnest, right? Hey, like, could you explain that to me and how does that work, etc. But when you watch it, no, that's not what was happening. This is what was happening. Okay, show Anna for a second.
So what does that mean? I don't even understand what you mean, show Anna for a second. What does that mean, show Anna for a second? But does the director have a gun that he can shoot from across the studio in case I have a gun?
Yeah.
Because let me tell you something, that bullet can really shoot through the studio like butter.
So it's one more thing. Upon reading it, I thought, you know, I think maybe maybe he got a little confused, and maybe people are overhyping how confused he got. Upon watching it, I realized it wasn't the confusion as much as he was mad that the proposed solution didn't involve teachers trying to execute the shooter. Like, he's like, where's the gun? Where's the gun?
But it was strange. He was strangely dismissive of the attorney general. Curtis Hill, by the way, is his
name. Indiana.
Of Indiana, yeah.
Was I the only one thinking there might be a little bit of a racial dynamic there?
It went through my mind.
Yeah.
Because he wouldn't make eye contact with him, and I thought it was so incredibly strange. Like, just if you're asking him a question, just make eye contact with him. Talk to him as if he's a human being. Show that you're trying to comprehend what he's telling you.
Yeah.
And he didn't seem to do any of that. By the way, Hill says more states need red flag laws that allow them to take guns away from people they believe to be dangerous. Hill says Indiana is one of only 5 states with a red flag law. It allows police to take guns away from people who present an imminent risk of injury to themselves or others, including people diagnosed with mental illnesses who failed to take prescription medication, or those with a documented history of violent or emotionally unstable behavior. So his suggestions were all about containing this mass shooter, finding a way to distract him from his target, creating certain safeguards. It's just that his solutions didn't provide what Trump wanted, which is more weapons on campus.
I realize as you read that last part too, apparently I'm having a lot of mid-segment epiphanies here. I realized that as you were reading who would not get to have guns, maybe Trump thought, oh, then I wouldn't get to have a gun. Mentally unfit people who were a little unstable.
No, but he passed his dementia test with flying colors, Shane. He's a very stable genius.
He can tell what a rhinoceros looks like. He's nailed it. Indiana is not known for being the most liberal state. So it's not like he was dealing with Nancy Pelosi's cousin who came in from San Francisco and is telling him this. It should have been a friendly situation. Mike Pence is vice president from Indiana. The attorney general of Indiana is here. He's got some proposed solutions that he could brag has worked because his vice president helped to put them in place, whatever, right? But instead, the child heard from an adult, and the adult didn't confirm what he wanted to confirm. But I wanted ice cream. Why isn't there any ice cream here?
Yeah.
It's just so sad.
So I'm torn watching that a little bit. You know, we've been talking to a lot of the gun groups in the last couple of days, and one thing I'm kind of detecting is that there's an insider conversation that's happening, and then there's what the people want, which is an assault weapons ban, mm-hmm. right, and banning high-capacity clips. I think that this red flag law is probably right on the edge. It's probably the boldest thing within the insider speak. But you know, there's so many solutions that are being put on the table that are really not that bold. And part of it is like, well, why doesn't he just accept that? You know, there's gonna be, I guess, canisters in the hallway with mm-hmm. with
smoke
coming out mm-hmm. to distract the gunman. It's like, okay, that's good. Mm-hmm. That's not the real solution we need. I mean, that's like the last ditch effort, right?
Right.
So hopefully that's not where the bipartisan consensus lands. So I feel a little tension being like, you know, I kind of want to gang up on him, but also the scope of conversation I want is actually not represented in this conversation right now.
Right.
Yeah, so that's a great point from a policy perspective. And one last thing about it in terms of Trump as president is he doesn't do his homework. So if he had done his homework, he might know what the attorney general was going to say. And he would have a reaction to that and think it through. Like if somebody told me, hey, we're going to have a conversation with the attorney general of any given state, it's going to be on national TV, and he's going to propose a solution. My first question would be, what's the solution? And I'd like to understand that better so I don't get surprised in front of the whole country. Trump, of course, never bothered to read that, never bothered to ask, was totally unprepared. So when he hears it, he's like genuinely surprised, and he keeps thinking like, why isn't he giving me my ice cream? I want guns. I want the teachers to have guns. And you're talking about intelligent solutions here
right.
that don't match what I wanted. But if you'd done your homework, you'd already know that. And maybe you could have come up with, like, if you're unhappy with that, you could have canceled it. You know, if you're a Republican out there, you should be maybe mad at him for not canceling it, not doing the homework, or to more effectively challenge him and go, hey, I understand that, but here is my point of view on it, instead of.
Yeah, Yeah, well,
so sad.
Well, we know that the, you know, president who has been applauded as a great deal maker is actually a terrible deal maker. He's not interested in negotiating. He's not interested in having a conversation. He's interested in getting what he wants, and he's also interested in validation. But to your point, Adam, I hear what you're saying about, you know, the insider discussions and how the things being proposed aren't really legitimate solutions that would prevent this from happening again in the future. My issue is that while they're playing patty cakes with one another with these non-solutions, you do have members of the far right who are not holding back in talking about how they want more guns, more Absolutely. Guns for teachers, more armed guards on campus. And by the way, I don't think that most Americans have forgotten that there have been multiple cases of school resource officers who have gotten incredibly physical with students, dragging them by their hair, slamming them on the ground whenever they're misbehaving even a little bit. Are you comfortable with your students or your kids going to school with armed guards who could use lethal weapons to respond to incidents like that? I don't know. I wouldn't feel comfortable with
that. That's a great point. And we see the amount of deference that's given to police officers when they pull someone over for a broken taillight.
Right.
And then they kill them and the courts let them off. What does that mean for our kids in school?
It's terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. Let's take a quick break here. We've got amazing stories coming up. We've got the story of the DCCC, that's the Democrats in the House, attacking their own candidates. It's unreal. That's going to make you so mad. On the other hand, the students in Florida doing such a wonderful job of calling out the politicians. So we'll do all that when we return. All right, back on the Young Turks, Cenk, Anna, and Adam with you today. Let me read a couple of tweets, hashtag TYT Live, to talk to us during the show. Mike writes in, the audio bite of Trump saying, I'm sorry, I just don't know what that means, needs to be on the soundboard.
I just don't know what that means, honestly. I don't know what that means.
Okay. I like how he said, honestly. We get it. We know.
Okay. Ask and ye shall receive. Bart already clipped it up. We'll put it on the machine on the next show. Eclectic Mistralania writes in, Anna should go into acting. Maybe a spin-off show on TYT Network with just recreations of footage.
People are asking for a home improvement show, and I'm genuinely considering it.
Okay, we are not, though. check that out on another network. Okay, so. Okay. I don't know what that means. Okay. Sean Phoenix writes in, first time I ever heard Trump admit that he didn't know what someone else was talking about. He usually knows it all and uses the best words. Santos Huante writes in, RoboCop, hall monitor. And Kevin Towell says, I guess when Betsy DeVos privatizes the US public school system, the new school uniforms will have to be bulletproof vests for all students. Sad. But Kevin, you don't know how right you are. After the Parkland shooting, bulletproof backpack sales went up 30%.
I mean, can you blame the people buying them?
This is the insanity we live in America now. Man, some progressive better win in 2020, and we better straighten this stuff out as soon as humanly possible. All right, Anna, what's next?
The students who are holding politicians accountable for doing very little in regard to mass shootings in the United States are not letting up. In fact, they are speaking out against politicians like Donald Trump, Marco Rubio, and more. And the recent examples have to do with Trump meeting with some of these victims and essentially needing a note card to tell him how to be decent to the victims. So that's the notorious note card that went viral recently. Basically tells the president to communicate to these students that he hears them because it's something that he can't remember on his own. But I want to give you some of his strategy when it comes to dealing with these students and how much it kind of deviates from the way he usually deals with situations. So Trump has said he believes that understanding and channeling the nation's grief is a strong suit for him as president, assuring a reporter during his campaign that empathy, quote, will be one of the strongest things about Trump.
Okay, all right, sorry, let's pause there for a second. Look, I don't know if we overemphasize it, underemphasize it, but what a preposterously insane thing to say. Empathy will be one of the strongest things about Trump. Can you imagine if any person in your life talked like that? Like you're talking to someone and they say, oh, empathy is going to be one of the strongest things about Uyghur. You'd be like, what, who am I talking to? Which, who, what kind of lunatic talks like that? Mm-hmm. That empathy has to be one of your strong suits. It'll be one of your strongest suits. And he says that, of course, always to overcompensate. I'm a very stable genius. Yeah. In other words, he's unstable and knows what an idiot he is, right? And I mean, I know using your talking about yourself in the third person, some people hate that, and that okay, but sometimes it makes sense. But referring to your last name, it's so weird. It's so weird. If I went around going, I'll tell you something about Uyghur. Like, what's wrong with this guy? All right.
You know, he just tells it like it is. By the way, was he empathetic when he ended protections for Dreamers or when he deported non-criminal undocumented immigrants who have been in the country since they were kids? The people who were business owners, who had children and owned homes in the United States. Was he empathetic toward the accusers who said that Roy Moore had sexually assaulted them or molested them? Not very empathetic. I don't know. He also said, I just grieve for you. I feel so. It's just, to me, there could be nothing worse than what you've gone through. So those are some of the things that he said to the students. And to be fair, again, he is deviating from the way that he typically communicates with people, which is good. These are victims, and they should be treated differently from how Trump usually treats people.
I mean, thank God. If he bullied them, that would be. That last quote, there's nothing wrong with it.
Nothing wrong with it. Now, the students aren't buying it, though. And I want to give you a few examples of some of these victims who have stood up to Trump following some of his statements. Samantha Fuentes, who was shot in both legs during the Parkland assault, said she had felt no reassurance during a phone call that she had with Trump. He said he heard that I was a big fan of his, and then he said, I'm a big fan of yours too. I'm pretty sure he made that up. Talking to the president, I've never been so unimpressed by a person in my life. He didn't make me feel better in the slightest. Fuentes also said Trump had called the gunman a sick puppy and said, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, like 7 times.
He's not prepared for these calls because he doesn't want to make the calls. It's doing his homework. That's why he doesn't remember people's names often. And by the way, staffers, write it down and put it one by one in a card in front of him because he's obviously a child. You just got to get him to focus. So it's his incompetent staff as well. But to me, there was a parent who really liked interacting with Trump and thought he was a great guy. So look, and a little bit of people who didn't already like Trump came away thinking he was terrible.
Right.
People who liked Trump came away thinking he was okay, except for this woman. She did like Trump, mm-hmm. and then she was like, Jesus, what was that? Right? So maybe that's the most reflective.
Yeah. Right. Well,
one thing that sticks out to me here is, I mean, the fact that he had the words, I hear you, mm-hmm. written down, I think combined with that example of a very inauthentic conversation with students, stands for this larger proposition I really don't see reported anywhere, which is just how inhuman he is. You know, Obama would have been talking about his kids immediately, mm-hmm. right? If he was talking to kids, it would have been like, when I look into your eyes, when I see you shot, I think of, you know, my kids and how I would feel. And there was never, I mean, can you name one moment of even referring to his own family anywhere in his presidency, you know, to humanize an issue?
His daughter. I mean, I don't know about humanize an issue, but yeah, I hear what you're saying. And by the way—
Wait, do you hear me? Or do you hear me?
I don't know. Let me check my notes.
I just want to make sure it's for real. If it's not written down, it doesn't count.
I hear you. Okay. I hear you. It says right here.
Let me just be honest and say thank you for hearing me. Thank you.
I just wanted to quickly respond, sorry, Cenk, to your point about Obama. You're right. Obama would mention his kids, as he did when unarmed black kids were being shot and killed, and he said that he would think about his own children, or he would say that it's a kid that looked like him. And what happened on the Republican side when he would make those statements? He got attacked for it.
Yeah, so, I remember when he said it about Trayvon, they went nuts. They're like, how dare you humanize him? You know, I don't know if they know this, but conservatives and liberals, Republicans and Democrats are all human. And it would be nice if the president could show sympathy, whether they were a big fan of his or not a big fan of his. Mm-hmm. And can you imagine if Obama had any tragedy, like kept on asking for credit as Trump did in Puerto Rico and Houston and Florida, like, where's my credit? I did a great job with this. If Obama had done that, oh my God. But I mean, it's over and over again with Donald Trump doing outrageous things that no president has ever done. And he struggles with empathy because he is so self-centered that if he's trying to do empathy, and in this case, botched or not, I think he is trying empathy for the, maybe the first time, but he's got to try really hard because he doesn't have it in him.
So I want you to hear from another student, Sam Zeif. He's an 18-year-old student at Stoneman Douglas High. He said Mr. Trump had done little to comfort or console him. Take a look at this next video where he mentions Trump's card.
Do you get some sense that you were heard and that you've been heard in this whole matter? Is there some sense that there will be some work to fix what happened last week?
Well, I know I was heard because I saw it on Trump's little card, I hear you, but I don't think I was felt.
These kids are strong. It's pretty amazing. And it's leading to real change. You now have lawmakers in Florida who are proposing legislation that would limit some gun rights. And these are the types of laws that they would have never considered before. And it's because these teenagers are not just calling them out. They're hitting them where it hurts. They're talking about the corruption. They're talking about the NRA. They are not buying into this idea that the NRA is there to protect your Second Amendment. They know about how the money works. They know about weapons manufacturers. They're smart kids. We're very well aware. And I love that they're proving all of these naysayers who belittle them and minimize them as people who don't know anything. I love that they're proving them wrong.
Yeah, so two things about that. A lot of the Republicans are going around saying, oh yeah, George Soros put them up to it, right? And it's because it's projection. Whenever they don't have a thought in their heads, Republican politicians, they only do whatever their donors told them to do. Sometimes it's the NRA, some of the Koch brothers, Mercers, etc. So they naturally assume, well, those kids look like they got talking points or something, because they're dumb and they're like, I don't know what to say unless somebody gives me a talking point. And those kids look smart, so somebody must have given them a talking point. Who would it? For me, it's always a rich donor. So who is it for the kids? It must be George Soros. How in the world would George Soros have gotten down to Florida, given those kids talking points, and had them say, I mean, you have to be a lunatic to believe that for those kids. But they can't imagine that those kids on their own would have enough, you know, gumption, courage, and intelligence to put these ideas forward and to fight back. And unfortunately, I think the Democratic Party is so bad at fighting back that this is like the first resistance the Republicans have ever gotten. They're like, whoa, what is this?
Yeah, it's a good point. I didn't think about it in those terms, but they're certainly a lot more powerful than what we're seeing from our elected officials on the Democratic side. Yeah,
no doubt. I've been thinking for the last year that if we survive this moment, which I think we will, that one silver lining in retrospect will be just the civic awakening that has happened in this country and the new people who've gotten involved in the process. And this just seems like one big layer on that cake. Like people, young people, not just getting involved, but using their unique strengths as millennials to participate in the political process. Mm-hmm. So there are these apps out there now where it's like, oh, you type in your zip code and you get the NRA donations of every person who represents you. Mm-hmm. Like, and kids are texting that to each other as opposed to making plans to go to the movies, right? So it's like, wow, like they have awoken a sleeping giant and a set of tools that frankly people our age probably wouldn't be able to use as much. And it's just inspiring to think about how big the impact might be come November.
Absolutely. And it always amazes me that this is not some progressive school in California. This is Florida.
Yeah.
And even though they're in one of the most conservative states, when it comes to gun laws especially, these kids are not being, you know, brainwashed by that culture. They know that there needs to be some controls and they're fighting back, even in a state of Florida. That's the thing that gives me hope the most.
One last piece of almost unbearable hypocrisy. This note was actually sent to me by one of our viewers. He said, so a lot of Republicans argued that Roy Moore's 14-year-old and 16-year-old victims were adults enough to give consent. They're like, no, they were fine with it. Those 14-year-olds knew what they were doing. Now when you got 17 and 18-year-olds out there saying, yeah, I know what I'm doing. I don't want to get shot in a school and I saw my friends. Nah, what would they know? They can't think for themselves. How do you like that for hypocrisy?
Well, one of the things that the teenagers who unfortunately had to experience the mass shooting in Parkland, Florida, are now pointing to is political corruption. They are very well aware of how the NRA funds politicians. They know how the NRA is funded by weapons manufacturers that just want to make a buck by loosening whatever gun laws we have in place now. And so they are going after the politicians who are either being funded by the NRA or refuse to give up that funding by the NRA. Case in point, Marco Rubio. I love this story. Recently, a student from Parkland, Florida said the following. We should change the names of AR-15s to Marco Rubio because they are so easy to buy. Sarah Chadwick is the name of that student, and she's incredible. By the way, Rubio has an A-plus rating from the NRA and has received $3.3 million in donations from the organization over the course of his political career.
This is an earnest question. Did you just call him Ruby Ho?
No. If I did, that wasn't intentional.
Okay.
Sorry.
All right. No, I would do it. I don't care. yes. He. By the way, Donald Trump has taken 10 times as much in just one election cycle. He took about over $31 million from the NRA, both to support him and to attack Hillary Clinton. There's some questions about where some of that money came from, maybe from abroad, which would be illegal, by the way, and that's being investigated apparently. That's why it's not a coincidence that both Donald Trump and Marco Rubio haven't taken millions of dollars from the NRA, who takes millions of dollars from gun manufacturers, have decided that they don't want to slow down the sales of gun manufacturers. And so for a lot of people in DC, and unfortunately on TV, that's verboten. You're not allowed to talk about donors. Almost no television anchor ever asked the politicians about their donors. And in fact, when that became an issue in the 2016 primary on the Democratic side, they kept badgering Bernie Sanders like, are you saying that Hillary Clinton might have changed a vote based on her donors? With unbelievable disbelief. But these kids, they don't work on television. They don't know what's forbidden to say for whatever crazy reason. Mm-hmm. They're not in politics. They're like, well, it's kind of obvious. Marco Rubio took $3.3 million, and then he refuses to counter the NRA and refuses to buck this system. He has an A-plus rating from the NRA. Gee, I wonder why.
Right.
Right? And so, and by the way, not just credit to Sarah Chadwick for that great, great quote, but also to Cameron Caskey, who asked him in the first place in the town hall, will you give up the NRA money? And he absolutely refused to.
Cameron was relentless. Follow-up after follow-up after more follow-ups than most journalists do, right?
Absolutely. No, I would take those kids and put them on cable news. I swear to God, way more than I would have those current cable news anchors. Because they don't know what the unwritten rules are. The unwritten rules are political money goes into cable news. It goes into cable news at billions of dollars. So
So I have to jump in because I think for the most part you're right. But I think it's certainly the case when it comes to income inequality, regulating the banking system, anything that has to do with financial reform. They never talk about corruption in politics, ever, ever, ever. They won't touch it. Because a lot of those banks, a lot of the people who are in favor of crony capitalism do buy advertisements on cable news. But there is something a little different that I'm noticing when it comes to political corruption in regard to the NRA. Usually after a mass shooting, they will talk about that political corruption for a day or so, and then they'll move on.
But you know why? Mm-hmm. Because gun manufacturers don't buy ads on cable news.
That's right, I was gonna get to that. Mm. So they feel a lot more, look, this is my speculation, obviously, but I feel like they're a lot more comfortable talking about that form of political corruption as opposed to the corruption that we see with Wall Street.
Or pharmaceutical companies, which are huge advertisers,
oil companies,
et cetera.
Yeah. So just to validate something you both have been saying for years, we've been recently doing some focus groups around the country. Trump voters, drop off Democratic base voters. And one thing that unites voters everywhere is this lack of faith in the system, the idea that the system is bought. And again, one silver lining here will be that these issues of systemic corruption are being mainstreamed. And for the long haul, hopefully. So it's pretty amazing. It also is notable that Rubio's response to this was, no, they're not buying me off. They're buying into my agenda.
Right.
As if that's a great. So my agenda includes kids getting killed in school. Like that's a horrible thing for him to say.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a lose-lose. And it's amazing to see the tables turned on Republican politicians like this so that Either way they answer it, they're looking pretty bad right now. It's just a matter of the spotlight finally being shined.
Now, look, when you've got deeply establishment figures like Senators Gillibrand and Booker now saying no corporate PAC money, I'm not going to take it anymore, the tide has turned. So wolf-pack.com, get in the fight, find a way. Even if it's not Wolfpack, make it another group, but make sure you fight to get money out of politics, because the cavalry with these younger generation has arrived. So up and at them. Let's go fight. Let's go win.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll hear a little more from Trump at CPAC, unfortunately, but you don't want to miss it.
All right, back on A Young Turks, Cenk, Anna, and Adam with you guys. Sean writes in, Obama never had to use a card to express emotion. He cried for the children during his presidency. And it, look, we mentioned the case of Trayvon and unarmed black teenagers, but he also cried during the mass shootings. And he was like, he couldn't believe that it was happening. And he put up a picture of the victims on his desk and tried to remind himself of that every single day. And by the way, you know, I was not shy about criticizing Obama and his lack of genuineness on a lot of issues, but that was not among them. That actually, he was genuine about that. You could tell it broke him up, and he fought way harder than he did on other issues, in my estimation, on that issue. Look, I wish he fought as hard on every issue, but it was great that he fought on that and with the emotion that he did. Gabby Morita writes in, is Trump Ferengi? He needs to be reminded to emote human empathy. Otherwise, his default mode is scam everyone I meet. But look, that ending, Gabby, that's such a great point, because this is something I've talked about a lot on this show, that not all rich people, not even close, but some wealthy folks have gotten there because they're willing to do what others are not willing to do, because some of them have no shame. Whether it's releasing porn tapes, pretending that you didn't shoot them to get famous, I don't know who I might be referring to, I'm just saying, right? Or it's guys like Trump who run Trump University, which is an obvious scam. And he knows he's taken the last dollar out of these people's pockets. And he thinks, suckers, because he can't, it's almost a sociopathic. I mean, is that the right way of saying it? He's a sociopath, right? He just doesn't care. I mean, how does that not break you up? That's why he's got to try really hard to have empathy, because it doesn't come natural to him. Anyway, okay, so member shout outs today are Grant Dixon and Michelle Wright, but let's do one more member shout out to Brent Welder. There he is, he's running for office in Kansas. We're raising money for him at tytkansas.com. That's you guys giving $15,840 so far. If he gets to $50,000, he could have a field team go knock on doors and win that race. Poll released yesterday by Adams Group, PCCC, Public Policy Polling did the actual poll itself. It says that he's got a 7-point lead on the Republican incumbent, Kevin Yoder. And if you don't know Kevin Yoder, well, bless your heart. Okay, but let me just tell you quickly a couple of things about Kevin Yoder and how despicable he is. He's top 10 recipient of NRA money. And he sponsored an amendment that would make sure that taxpayers have to insure Wall Street bankers when they're doing risky trading. So even if you're a conservative, you really want more bank bailouts, that's what Kevin Yoder's for. You're gonna be shocked to find out why. Turns out some of his top donors are the top banks in the country. Of course, Kevin Yoder is like a poster child for corruption. It gets worse, he also is in favor of legislation to help payday lenders. Basically, loan sharks, and he's the number one recipient of donor money from payday lenders in the country. Brent Welder, TYT member, Wolfpack volunteer, just endorsed by Adams Group, PCCC.
Definitely. And while people at home are typing in tytkansas.com to make a donation to Brent's campaign, let me tell you again why he is so important that he is running. So, in addition to being ahead in the polls, he was a longtime TYT member, Wolfpack member. He was a Bernie Sanders delegate to the Democratic National Convention, serving on the platform committee where he authored a major campaign finance reform provision of what became the Democratic National Platform. He is the real deal. This is the kind of person that the establishment does not want to be the Democratic standard bearer in a very competitive race like this, right? Also, true to Democrats often shooting themselves in the foot, You know, they will determine, you know, we collectively will determine whether Democrats have the capability of picking up 20 seats, 30 seats, or more like 70 or 80 seats. And our chances will go way up to really send a message in this resistance moment if we have more people on the ballot like Brent Welder. Right? This is key to victory. He's out there campaigning on things people actually are inspired by. Medicare for all, campaign finance reform, expanding Social Security. So it is our obligation to make sure that he wins this primary against somebody who is campaigning as having the courage to compromise and leading from the center, leading from the middle. Yeah. It's ridiculous. So seriously, tytkansas.com, it is so important. And not only will he be able to hire a field team and really bring this message to voters, but we are liberating him from having to do call time to big out-of-state donors, and instead allowing him to go around his district, knocking on tens of thousands of doors, because we are fueling him at a grassroots level.
All right, so look, if you're watching this later when we're not live and it's on YouTube, in the description box, you could just click on tytkansas.com. We'll also put Brent's website up in the description box, brentwelder.com. So you can click on it, find out more about him. It'll be in the comment section on Facebook. You know, one more thing about Brent, which I love, he donated to build the studio. So we got to stick together, guys. So he was there for us. We want to be there for him. And this is how we win. Not any big donations. Brent gave a small donation here. You guys can give a small donation back to him, and we will as well. And let's get to $50,000. Let's hire the team that he needs to do that and get the volunteers out there. And wouldn't it be an image like Adam said, wouldn't it be an amazing story in the middle of Kansas? Here's this true progressive who's going to represent you guys, not taking any corporate PAC money. It'll send shockwaves through Washington, and it'll be fantastic. You could make that happen.
All right. I feel like talking about the DCCC is a perfect follow-up to what you guys just discussed. So let's get to that story. Trump said stupid things at CPAC. Whatever. We all know it. So let's skip that story and go to what's happening with Democrats. There's a special election taking place in Texas's 7th district, and it turns out that establishment Democrats are aggressively pursuing an Oppo research campaign against a Democrat who is running in the primary. Her name is Laura Moser. She is a progressive, and the DCCC absolutely despises her. And nothing made that clearer than a recent attack that they lodged against her, which read as follows. Now, this is from Meredith Kelly, DCCC communications director. She says, voters in Houston have organized for over a year to hold Representative John Culberson accountable and win this Clinton district. Let's stop for a second. So in 2016, this particular district did vote for Hillary Clinton. So that's what she's referring to there. Unfortunately, she continues, Laura Moser's outright disgust for life in Texas disqualifies her as a general election candidate and would rob voters of their opportunity to flip Texas's 7th in November.
So let's stop here. They actually have an even worse quote about her that we're going to get to in a second. But think about how unreal this is. This is the Democratic Party attacking a Democrat in the primaries. First of all, what happened to pretending to be neutral during the primaries? I guess that's gone. That's totally out the door, right? You'll find out in a second their financial motivation to be opposed to Laura Moser and why they're not neutral. Secondly, they did an Oppo research memo on her. Why is a Democrat the opposition? Shouldn't you be spending your time doing opposition research on the Republicans? They're so soft in the general election. But the Democratic Party is gathering opposition research on fellow Democrats because they're progressives.
Right.
This proves everything we were worried about the Democratic establishment. They said it in public. They did this publicly, which leads to point number three about that quote. You can't take it back. So if Laura Moser wins the primary, and you're goddamn right she will, and we'll have the links down below to donate to her, to volunteer to her, go to her website. I couldn't oppose the DCCC more on this issue. But if she wins the primary, then the Republicans are going to run ads saying her own party said that she's disqualified because of her disgust for Texas. You monsters, you corrupt idiots.
Can we emphasize the idiots part right there for a second?
Yeah.
So in their mind, they think we want to take back this district. We don't think this is the most viable candidate, and we're going to make the very rare step of blasting our own one of our own candidates, right? If you need to understand the credibility of their political analysis, just look at their political tactic here. Mm-hmm. Were the net effect of them attacking her, just like Debbie Wasserman Schultz doing what she did to Bernie, has the effect of rallying tons of support around her. There will now be links in this video. Our group is going to send an email for her tomorrow. Many other groups were out there endorsing her today. So if you want to think about the political strategic insights of the Democratic Party establishment, this is representative of it. It's just shooting ourselves in the foot after shooting ourselves in the foot. And that's why it's so important that we not buy into some of the conventional wisdom that we're told to believe over and over again about how to fight various fights. We need to support our own and get some real progressives elected.
So Adam makes a great point. The only upside of this is that now you've almost guaranteed her a victory in the primary. Thanks a lot. God, you guys are so stupid. They thought in their bubble, like, we'll show her. Okay, we already picked our hand-picked people, one of whom is a former Goldman Sachs guy. So we've got this figured out. And all of our rich friends in Washington will be so aghast at Laura Moser, this will end her. No, what you've just told everybody is she's the actual progressive in the race, and she doesn't represent the donors. Thank you, you morons. But one other thing is, Adam said we, but they don't view it as themselves as progressive. That's, we keep making that mistake. I make it too from time to time. They view themselves as, how am I going to get rich? I'm the guy. And so that goes to the second terrible thing they said about Laura Moser.
All right, so let's fast forward to graphic 23. So the more serious charge, this is according to The Intercept, the more serious charge the party leveled at Moser was to imply corruption and self-dealing. They wrote that in 2017, Moser paid over $50,000 in campaign money to her husband's DC consulting firm. More than one of every $6 spent by her campaign went straight into her husband's DC company's bank account. Okay, so that's true. But that money went into the firm's bank account and immediately went out of the bank account because that firm bought political ads for her, which is what political consultants do. Now, here is where the DCCC felt like there was a misstep. First of all, let me be clear. The DCCC does self-dealing all the time, okay? And what I mean by that is they have their little list of consultants that they literally force Democratic candidates to work with. And they make a ton of money off of taking campaign money from these candidates and padding their own pockets, okay? So this whole allegation of self-dealing is laughable when it comes from the very people who do it themselves on a regular basis. It's become so normalized. Now, what Moser did in this case is not illegal. It's not unusual. Again, that money went toward political ads, which is what that money was supposed to go toward.
Can I add a point?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, so let's just be clear about what firm this is. Mm-hmm. This is actually Bernie's online consulting firm.
Yes.
The one that helped him build a grassroots army. So essentially what she was doing was investing in the grassroots as an alternative to big money politics.
That's right.
Right? In this moment, as she gets attacked by the establishment, ironically, she'll be more empowered to put up a big sale and let the wind blow her campaign forward because she has a huge grassroots army that she's been investing in, which is what we want candidates to do, right? I actually talked to someone a couple years ago who was the online director for a major progressive senator now. And what this online director said was, if I made one mistake in the campaign, it wasn't going to bat early enough for bigger investment in online, because that is how you build your grassroots army and have them with you for long haul. So this is, maybe one-fifth is too little. Maybe she should do more, if anything, but good for her for investing in the grassroots.
Yeah, and I want to be clear about that. The company's called Revolution Messaging, and it's Bernie's company, as in, not that he owns it, right. He also used them during the 2016 campaign and to great effect. So again, if anything, you've just done an ad for Revolution Messaging, so congratulations. Now, the losers who wound up losing to Donald Trump didn't use Revolution Messaging. They used the other companies that are connected to the DCCC and the people who work there. And they are brazen about those connections. Look, before we get into those connections, let me just say, I said on this show a long time ago that what do the corrupt do? It's you see it all across the world, it's not just America. In fact, the crown prince in Saudi Arabia is doing it right now. The most corrupt, the first thing they do is they smear the opposition with charges of corruption. So that by, we go, wait a minute, but you're the corrupt one. They're like, oh yeah, now you're just trying to copy me.
Right.
And sometimes the smear does work. If you're not knee deep in politics and you don't know. In fact, I talked to a person who voted for Bernie Sanders today who said, well, I didn't know she said that about Texas. Oh. So sometimes the smears do work.
Yeah.
I think in this, in the long run here, it's going to backfire because of all the things that Adam has explained. But if you never heard about it, you might think, oh my God, Laura Moser's the one that's got issues. No, no, it's the DCCC, which in DC, they're known informally as the consultant factory. One is the revolving door, the people who used to work at the DCCC then become consultants, and then the DCCC gives them all the contracts.
I got to give you guys some specifics on that, because that is the part that really infuriated me. This is all about making money, this is all big business to them, and it's about crushing people who have a progressive grassroots agenda that they just cannot stand. So to give you some examples of elected Democrats who have spoken out against this whole consultant scam, Representative Tim Ryan from Ohio said after the 2016 elections that the DCCC, quote, needs to go on a consultant detox. Okay, but there's more. I want to give you specifics. So consultants take a percentage of all media placement of election ads. That enabled consulting firm Mothership Strategy, which was founded by DCCC veterans, to earn $3.9 million from the failed special election campaign for John Ossoff in Georgia last year. Around $2.5 million of that Ossoff haul came from media buys. So they're just making money. And keep in mind, the DCCC pressures the candidates to work with their consultants. It's
I just got to make a real quick point about that. I'm going to let Anna continue. Mm-hmm. So this is what I if Bernie Sanders and real progressives like Laura Moser, James Thompson in Kansas, Brent Welder in Kansas, Allison Hartson in California, the list goes on. If those real progressives win, they're fighting to get money out of politics. Well, that would take money from these consultants. That would be devastating to them. On the other hand, when John Ossoff loses, who cares? They got rich. What difference does it make if John Ossoff wins or loses? They got the $3.9 million anyway. So it's not, they don't share your priorities. Their priority is how do I make a buck? Mm-hmm. And then for them to turn around and smear a progressive like Moser, beyond the pale, of course. You got more?
I do have more. So why do they hate Moser so much? Yes, it has something to do with her progressive values. But Moser actually called out the DCCC back in 2017 in an article that she wrote for Vogue. And in that article, she it was titled "Want More Women to Vote? Here's an idea, stand up for them." And it went on to slam the DCCC for saying the party would welcome anti-choice candidates. Now, in that piece, she wrote the following. "As a first-time congressional candidate, I've been warned not to criticize Ben Ray Lujan." And is that how you say his name?
I believe it's Lujan.
Lujan, okay. "Ben Ray Lujan and the powerful Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, but I cannot hold my tongue while Lujan and the DCCC abandon the commitment to human rights that brought me to the party in the first place." DCCC didn't like that, and so the opposition research began immediately. And by the way, just to clarify for anyone who's confused, why some people are, you know, why she's being smeared as someone who hates Texas. She had once said that she likes living in the city more than a small town, and so she gave the example of Paris, Texas, as a place that she didn't enjoy living in. And the DCCC took that out of context and used it to smear her as someone who hates Texas.
And by the way, she was referring to Paris, Texas, where her grandparents are from, and which is hundreds of miles away from her district. But they made it seem like she's saying it about her own voters in her district. A disingenuous lie from the DCCC, who would have guessed? So I guess this is a declaration of war against all progressives and against the non-corrupt. Look, so Moser, by the way, is also just Democrat. And just Democrats, the one thing you should know, and you can look at their progressive platform, et cetera, but a lot of groups are progressive. PCCC is wonderfully progressive, Democracy for America, Our Revolution, et cetera. But all of them have pledged not to take corporate PAC money, the Justice Democrats. None of them take corporate PAC money. So that is what makes those consultants in DC furious. So in reality, the executive director, for example, the new executive director for DCCC is Daniel Senna. Married to Elizabeth Christie Senna, who after Daniel was selected as the executive director, His wife wound up being a partner at Greenberg Quinlan Rosner. And then the DCCC paid them $395,000 over 2 years and in the 2016 election. And in this cycle, have already funneled $525,000 to them. So what a wonderful little circle they have going. But there's a lot more details. We'll put the article from The Intercept, which is excellent, in the description box as well. Written by three excellent reporters, Lee Fong, Ryan Grimm, who's also a TYT contributor, and David Dayan, as good as it gets.
Can I say one more thing on this?
Yeah.
They might have done us a favor by outing themselves in this situation, because this is honestly just the tip of the iceberg. They have made explicit what they do behind the scenes every single day. We talk to so many candidates who feel pressured by them, who are encouraged to get out of the race by them. Mm-hmm. Even those who are ahead in fundraising because of grassroots donations are told to get out of the race because they're too progressive. In some cases, other reasons that are because they're too liberal in various ways. This should be a rallying cry for all of us and a wake-up call. And I know that my grandma in the past has told me, I wrote a $10 check to the Democratic Party. And I'm like, Grandma, I like where you're going in general, but let me talk to you about other places to donate, right? But people just assume good intentions here, mm-hmm. and they're not only undermining our agenda, but again, I believe undermining our ability to win. And I'm going to say we in the broad sense, those who want a big resistance victory in 2018, our ability to win, because they're unintentionally sabotaging us by putting lame people on the ballot and undermining people who can actually win.
Yeah, and one last thing. It's a story that we broke at TYT. TYT investigates reporter Michael Tracy broke it. It's referenced in this Intercept story. There's a memo that they sent to all the candidates. Now, one of them said, hey, don't attack one another. Oops, you just attacked a candidate in a primary violating your own memo in the most brazen, outrageous way that I have ever seen. So apparently you didn't mean it. What you meant was progressives unilaterally surrender to the establishment candidates. Okay.
Yeah, don't attack us. That's what they meant.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. God, there's the worst hypocrites. But number two, they told the candidates, and that's what James Thompson from Kansas, a wonderful progressive who almost won last time in Kansas, this time he will win, objected to. He said, why do I have to spend all of this money with only the consultants that are on your list? What if I found a great person working in the middle of Kansas? What if I've got great progressives? No, you won't help me unless I spend most of my money with those consultants that you're in bed with. He said, no, sorry, no, I'm not doing it, okay? And that's what all these progressive candidates should say. And to Adam's point, to all of you out there, if you're gonna give money, that's great, because small dollar donations are pooled together, are more effective, more powerful, and will beat these corporate PACs. But give it to progressive groups that you trust, because those groups have earned your trust. Don't just hand it over to people that call themselves Democrats. All right, check out all the links below. Wonderful story by The Intercept. And by the way, all the candidates we mentioned, we'll put their links down below too. Go give them small dollar donations directly. Don't run it through this consultant factory. Okay, we're out of time. All right, Adam Green, speaking of wonderful progressive groups, go everybody check out boldprogressives.org.
Bold what?
I believe it's boldprogressives.org. All right.
And it's the PCCC. The P part is very important there.
Yes, extremely important.
No ambiguity about that. We are not the DCCC.
But that's actually, you did that on purpose. Yeah. And it's actually perfect in this case, because instead of the Democratic, CCC, it's the Progressives.
Change Campaign Committee
in this case. All right, thanks, Adam. We appreciate it. Ida Rodriguez is next, and we have some amazing stories for you guys as well, including one of the worst ideas on a college campus I have ever seen. All right, we'll be right back.